Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Funky Monkey MMA.
Never die. Let's go. Count it.
Legends of the Cage, proud sponsor of Funky Monkey MMA Radio, helping legends of yesterday and tomorrow. You can find them on social media, on Twitter at TrueMMAHOF, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Legends of the Cage, or go to the website, LegendsOfTheCage.com, together with Funky Monkey MMA Radio.
You can listen to Funky Monkey MMA Radio on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, Castroller, the TuneIn Radio app, MMAFutures.com, and FightBookMMA.com. If you want the freshest news and notes on MMA, then check out FunkyMonkeyMMA.com. Interested in sponsoring the show? Then send an email to FunkyMonkeyMMA@gmail.com.
You're listening to Funky Monkey MMA.
MMA fans, are you looking for something to set you apart? Then check out AlterCationClothing.com. Altercation Clothing is a brand with attitude, offering fans and fighters alike a variety of specialty shirts. If you won't back down, then you're ready for an altercation. Altercation Clothing can be found on Facebook at Facebook.com/AlterCationClothing. Altercation Clothing is a proud sponsor of Funky Monkey MMA Radio. Are you looking for a new MMA website to check out? Then get over to MMAWreckage.com for the latest news, analysis, videos, in-depth blogs, fighter interviews, and more. From the local shows to the UFC, MMAWreckage.com has you covered. You can find MMA Wreckage on social media as well, on Twitter at MMA Wreckage, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/UFC fans page. So stay up to date with all things MMA at MMAWreckage.com.
MMA Futures and Funky Monkey Radio partner together to bring you the latest fighter interviews and MMA news. Check out MMAFutures.com.
You're listening to Funky Monkey MMA.
Susan Zingari here, and boy, do we have a big show for you today at Funky Monkey MMA Radio. The living legend Dan Severn joins us today, and for those of you who are new to MMA or might need a little refresher course, here's a little background on Dan. Dan Severn is a retired American mixed martial artist and professional wrestler. In the early days of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, Dan was part of the tournament style of fighting. The 6 foot, 2 inch, 250-pound heavyweight holds a fifth-degree black belt in judo and a second-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu. Dan has fought some of the biggest names in UFC history, including Royce Gracie, Ken Shamrock, Tank Abbott, Josh Barnett, and Forrest Griffin, to name a few. On May 17, 1996, Dan was crowned the UFC Super Fight Champion in his home state of Michigan. He defeated the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, to regain the title. Dan is the only triple crowned UFC champion in the sport today. Severn has won 2 8-man tournaments and the Ultimate 1996, which pitted champions and runner-ups against each other to determine the true champion of the sport. A gifted wrestler, he was nicknamed the Beast, and he often used his Greco-Roman-style wrestling and combat sambo to gain an edge on his opponents. And speaking of wrestling, Dan was a two-time All-American at Arizona State University, the original Sunkiss Kid of the Sunkiss Kids, and a wrestling coach at both his alma mater, Arizona State, and Michigan State. Dan entered the Wrestling Alliance, NWA, in 1995 and defeated Chris Candido for his first NWA World Heavyweight Championship on the Smoky Mountain Wrestling card. And here's an interesting fact, MMA fans. As I previously mentioned, Seven would go on to win the UFC Super Fight Heavyweight Championship that year, making him the first and only man to hold an MMA and a professional wrestling championship simultaneously. He also had the U.S. national record for victories by pin from 1976 to 1992. Dan has fought or wrestled for just about every promotion you can think of, including King of the Cage, Pride FC, Cage Rage, WEC, Rings, MFC, and the World Wrestling Federation. According to Tapology, Dan is ranked at an all-time of number 31 when it comes to the greatest MMA fighter of all time. He clocks in at 53 as the greatest MMA grappler of all time and takes the 113th position as the current best MMA heavyweight fighter. It is my great honor and pleasure to welcome Dan Severn to the show today.
You're listening to Funky Monkey MMA.
Well, first up, Dan, thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview with us. It is an absolute honor to be speaking with you. By now, it's well known that you have fully retired from the sport of MMA, with your last fight being in 2012. Since you've stopped fighting, what have you been doing with your time away from the sport?
Well, I'm not darning any socks. I'm not rocking in any chairs. Red has known me for quite a number of years, and he knows that I continue to work on projects all the time. I'm looking for, you know, world domination in some manner or another.
Yeah, whenever I get a chance to talk to Dan, the first thing I ask is, where are you? Because it's almost like trying to find Waldo.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Anymore, I do these posts on my Facebook. I just simply say, the beast is on the loose. And then it's like I'll state, whatever state I'm in at the time and whatever I'm doing. I actually thought I could make up a shirt just called Beast Sightings and just be like a pair of goggles and, you know, on a shirt and you know, have my mug showing up into the goggles or something like that, just because I'm perpetual motion. I just, you know, text messages are good. Emails are good. Phone calls are okay. But if you show up in person, boy, you get a whole lot more done when you show up in person.
Yeah, especially when you are Dan Severn.
Well, again, a lot of it has to do with you, your personality, your credentials, but how you conduct yourself. I think a lot of that, and I think all those characteristics kind of play off of each other. And like I said, it's I just met Manny for the first time just a couple weeks ago in Syracuse. Was our first meeting, but, you know, come to find out, I didn't really realize that he knew a couple of my brothers, one older brother, Dave, and my younger brother, Rod. So it was kind of nice just to get a chance to meet him for the first time and realize that, well, there's actually been a bond all along. I just was not aware of it.
But MMA is a very small world.
Well, everybody knows the marauding Severn, so, I mean, your reputation precedes you guys.
Well, the funny part is when you talked about food and stuff like that, I got to say, we terrorized more buffets and probably banned at more buffets. But what can you say?
I'm curious to what a Severn Thanksgiving would be like, though. I mean, do you guys have, like, wrestling matches during the day and then you go eat a bunch of food up or... And then go watch the Lions, or how does that work?
I'll explain it a couple of different ways. The first couple of times that I would bring back wrestlers, when I coached both Arizona State and Michigan State, and during the summer months, I travel around bouncing from one wrestling camp to the next, just teaching. And sometimes I have a couple of wrestlers with me. And we end up at my parents' home, and then all of a sudden, they see a platter of chickens. A platter of this, a platter of this, and they're like going, "Wow!" Like, what's a special occasion? I call it. I'm like, it's called punch. It's called dinner. It's having a total of seven other brothers and sisters. And I always tell people, I'm the second oldest, second smallest male, and I'm not exactly a petite dewdrop. I have I have three sisters, and two of my sisters stand at 6 foot of height and weigh right around 200 pounds, but they're not heavy women. We grew up on a farm. So, the one sister, she's a physical therapist, and literally she helps the male physical therapist take people from beds to chairs, chairs to beds, because she's just so physically strong. There's just certain genes that have been instilled. And also, I think a lot of it is that work ethic. Because, like, when, you know, friends always wonder where I'm at, what am I doing? You know, it's when you woke up in the morning, you had to go take care of the animals before you were taken care of. And then at night when you came back from to school, or if you came back after a late wrestling practice, football practice, track and field practice, or you came back from meet or whatever, it didn't matter how late it was, you still had to go out and take care of the animals. So twice a day they got fed and watered. You know, as my father said, "Well, son, do you like to eat?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." I go, "So do the animals. Do you like to drink?" So do the animals. So he had a way of putting it in context. And there's also the theory of threes. He will ask you, and then he comes down upon you. So a great deal of respect. He wasn't shooting any blank shots right there. they weren't just mere threats. He followed through, which... I'll spin off into a tangent, which I have a tendency of doing. That's probably what's wrong with the United States. Everyone, there's no accountability, anyone's actions anymore. And I boil it down to, obviously, you have not had your ass beat in a while, have you? and most people have not, and that's probably what's wrong with the world. I've had it happen to me growing up, and by God, I sure did deserve it too. So I can't ever fault my dad or fault my mom for, you know, not hugging me enough or saying they love me enough. It's kind of like, man, everyone makes their own little way in this world. So enough going on the tangent. Let's go back to questions.
I got a follow-up for Kane's question. So Kane's statement when he first came out was that you have officially retired. So my question for you now is, what do you think about the... You know where I'm going. So
I smell what you're cooking here right now, Freddie. I smell what you're cooking.
Question for you. What'd you think about the announcement of the fight between Ken Shamrock and Royce Gracie? And, what's next?
Well, one of the first things, I mean, I'll let you know that I've already sent off an email to Scott Coker to see if I could possibly be a special guest, the play-by-play color commentator for that event. Also, and how do I get the winner of this match? I mean, I would, when I retired with a clause in my final 4 or 5 years. And Fred, you know this all too well. I mean, I was trying for one last major hurrah to kind of end a career on. And then I don't take too much stock into other people. I pursued it myself. I talked with Mark Coleman, Ken Shamrock, Royce Gracie. All three agreed to do matches, but it just seemed like always something was coming up. And so basically, finally, in my final year there, 2012, I just made an announcement at the end of 2011. I sent out a mass email to all the race promoter promotions I had in my database. I simply said, if you're planning on using my services, that better happen somewhere, of course, for 2012, because as of January 2013, this cat's going to retire. And so it came and went. I retired. And, you know, but now that this is happening, I hear this about this announcement, I'm thinking, how can I get in on this action here now? I'll take one or the other. I might even give you a Kmart Blue Light special, 2-for-1.
Well, you got to go and just show up and drop the gauntlet after the match is over. You run up in the cage and you just drop the gauntlet and let them know. Let the games begin.
You got to use it. You got to use some somewhat of suave, fair, proper etiquette there, though, man. You can't just walk up there like that. It's like I said, I'm trying to do the diplomatic way of trying to reach out to Scott Coker here first, and then what my next action, if I don't hear back from him, I'll send him off another friendly prod here, probably if not tonight, sometime early in the morning. I don't hear from them in, let's say, 24, 48 hours. Well, now I'm going to start using the media. I'll do up a little old Facebook, a little, 30-second to 1 minute little video. And what do I have to do? I need Facebook friends to if they have connections to Bellator, to a Scott Coker, to start to harass them. Let them know that the beast has awakened and he has an appetite for one or two more feastings.
Yeah, let's take a moment and talk about that real quick to our Funky Monkey fans out there. You guys are listening to this, you're listening to the interview. We're talking to Dan the Beast Severin. And what he's saying is, let's get in Bellator's ear so that Dan gets a rematch with one of these two gentlemen. The winner, the loser, either one of them, post on their page. Start.
He said he'll take both of them.
He'll take both of them.
I'll take one or the other, but I mean, obviously, I'd rather have the winner of the match there first. But I mean, it's however that's going to work out. I don't care. I mean, even if I'll go so far as I'll play Hoist's game. I'll go an unlimited time match for a submission grappler match if he doesn't want to do MMA. But I'm not.
Wow.
I mean, he can wear his gi if he wants to, but I'm not playing jiu-jitsu. I'm going to be playing just catch-as-catch-can. I'm going to play amateur wrestling. I'm going to play freestyle wrestling. No locks or holds will be banned. It's just time. Just go on for unlimited time to where someone eventually will give in, go unconscious, or tap out. Don't want to be inhibited, just unlimited amount of time, and no locks, holds, forbidden, no type of gi. Again, he can wear his gi if he wants to. I could care less.
Well, I'm in your corner.
I don't know if I want to just show up in my trunks. You know, the ab hasn't really done all that well over time.
Well, I'm definitely in your corner, man. I love the idea of you giving it one last shot, and I could see you doing it because we had a guy in judo, this guy Jane Brewster Thompson, who was productive into his 50s as a judo guy. He made the Olympic trials as a judoka because he worked his whole career. And even at sumo, he was doing sumo at like 55 because he still had the abilities. So, you know, 50 is the new 40. If you have the ability to do it, you should be allowed to ply your trade.
I look at this way there, man. It's because I'd be doing another match with, say, Ken Shamrock or Hoist Gracie. Really, what is the age difference? I mean, there was probably I am the senior statesman amongst them all. Obviously, you know, it's I think Ken is 51, and think and Hoist is what, in his late 40s. I'll guesstimate somewhere in that ballpark, and then there's Amoa that is a ripe old 57. I don't exactly look my age, nor do I act my age.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm all for it, dude. I think you'd be an excellent choice. Not just to blow smoke up your ass, but just knowing your reputation and just seeing how you operate. I think it's a hell of an idea.
It is. It's marketable in the sense that, you know, that I've had history with both athletes, and it was, well, with Ken, it actually makes it probably even the most obvious because we each have a leg up on each other. So there's the proverbial rubber match, the trifecta. Let's talk about some other stuff. We're just talking about Ken and Hoist, and that's old news. Let's talk about something new and refreshing.
Well, how do you feel about Ronda getting knocked out?
I was surprised. I mean, I've had a number of people ask me, and I go, I've said, I mean, man, I don't know about you, but I just don't watch. I never did watch much content of the UFC, period, or mixed martial arts. I mean, I do a lot of them. So the only time I really watch this stuff is when I'm doing an appearance at an MMA show, and then it's usually just a byproduct because most of the time I'm sitting there guessing and talking to the fans that are coming up at the table and looking at some trinkets of the trades, hats, T-shirts, 8x10s or belts, and you know, they want to hear some war stories. So most of the time, that's all I'm doing, just wrapping me up, talk about war stories and stuff like that. And every now and then I'll watch a little bit of what's happening up in the cage. That's typically what I see. I did not even know that UFC existed in the first place, but then that's to go back in time. Pay-per-views were not predominant like they are today. When pay-per-views were first coming out, they would only be in the major metropolitan areas of a state. So like I'm born and raised in Michigan, so they'd be, you know, maybe in the Detroit metropolitan area. It might be in Lansing or it might be in Saginaw or Flint. I mean, I was living in little old Podunk, Coldwater, Michigan, so it did not have pay-per-views. It was literally, a buddy of mine watched the first two, a video tapes of my old VHS tape, and then he shows it to me. And you know, I'm seeing people getting soccer kicked in the face, teeth are flying out. I'm thinking, you know, these are not exactly skills I possess. But then when he said, look at this skinny little guy doing jiu-jitsu, of course, he was informed to Hoist Gracie. So, like I said, it was an interesting way of how I found out about it. But then the way that technology continues to advance, I mean, by the time that they ever even announced the winner between Ronda Rousey Holmes match right there, you know, I'll bet that was tweeted and videos were shared who knows how many thousands of times over before that announcement was actually done inside the cage there because of cell phones and the ability to connect to the world.
I have a question. It just popped in my mind. Do you remember Rodney Holman as a wrestler in high school in Michigan?
Rodney Holman.
Yeah, he was from Michigan. He was a football player, and he played with the Cincinnati Bengals. He was a tight end, and he was on the team that went to the Super Bowl. But I found out
Where did he wrestle for? Do you know what Michigan school he wrestled for?
I don't remember what high school, but I heard he was like a 2-time state champion.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. When you look at some of the amateur wrestlers that went on to play, dual sports of wrestling and football in college, but then go on into NFL. I mean, there's been a number of them. I mean, in high school, I would throw a 150-pound wrestler on the line against a 300-pound lineman, and I would feel sorry for that 300-pound lineman because I know what the abilities are of a 150-pound wrestler. He's not going to go upstairs with them, but he's going to take those knees right out from underneath them.
Sure.
Most high school, really good high school football programs, typically the head football coach has the one of the wrestling coaches as his assistant, and then when the wrestling season kicks in, it's just vice versa. The wrestling coach now has the football coach because they usually play off of each other. So a lot of schools, again, I'm talking about specifically high school football programs, typically they have a good wrestling program and vice versa.
Yeah.
He actually went to Ypsilanti High School and graduated in 1978.
Ah, so Fred, you jumped on the internet there, didn't you? I'm thinking that might be just off the cell phone. That's what I mean. We have got the world at our fingertips. I do a lot of motivational type speaking, and one of the things that I will do is when I go into high school or something like this, and I will hold up a cell phone now, and I'll say, "What is this?" And they're like, "It's a cell phone." I go, "What else is it?" And they look kind of close. What are all the other functions I can do? And they can say, "You do this, do this," and I'll say, "You've got the world in the palm of your hand. If you don't like your career choice or something like this, you can make a difference. You can take you can keep a job going, but then take an online class and better yourself and move on to something else." So it's like when I hear people bellyaching, I'm thinking, the only person you have to blame is look in the mirror. Opportunities are galore, and they sit there in the palm of your hand. And when I say about the palm of your hand, you go to a shopping mall and stop and do a 360. Find the person that doesn't have a cell phone in the palm of their hand. That's how abundant they are. I mean, it's, when I used to have meals at the Severn table, again, not my siblings, but, you know, now with my kids, because that technology age is there. I literally, one of the rules was no cell phones were allowed at the table. And even when they would hear, you know, hear the different noise of a ping, a text came in, or a phone message came in, or stuff like this, you could almost see them get the shakes, the twitches, and stuff like this. I'm like, no, let it go. Sit here, and we're going to do the thing called converse with one another. Make eye contact. Converse. What happened in your day? Interact. I says, yeah. What's Bill going to take, you know, all of 20, 30 minutes? And the way that Mike is in hell food, it's shorter than that. But, you know, and then you go be on your merry way with your cell phone once again. But, I mean, I swear to God, some people, you'd almost have to take a putty knife to pry it from the palm of their hands, because that is, it's literally an addiction. I watch people walking down the sidewalk, and they got both their hands up, they're texting away. I call it prayer walking, because actually, if you were to have a Bible in their hands, it looked like they were actually in this possession reading the Bible, and then all of a sudden they don't know what they're doing. They're walking out, they bump into things, they walk into people, they walk out into intersections, and people start blowing their horns. It's crazy. It's again, well, look at all the texting that people do just while they're driving, and all the accidents that are related to it. I got rear-ended two years ago, and it was on a beautiful sunny day and stuff like this, and the lady was trying to say that she had a spasm in her leg. She had like a cramp. And I'm thinking, yeah, no way. To me, it's like she was probably texting as she slammed into me.
Wow. Well, you got to be careful out there.
No, you do.
Yeah.
Well, I like motorcycles, for example. I would not own a motor. Well, I mean, I would not feel safe driving a motorcycle out on the open road. I mean, as silly and stupid as people are with that texting.
Yeah.
I don't even feel safe in a car. Motorcycle, beautiful thing to own, but that you lay a motorcycle down, you might as well. Why a state wants you to wear a helmet? I don't know why, just so that maybe you can identify the body after it goes down. I mean, that's about the only reason for that, because it's you're done. If you go down, you're done.
So, Dan, they have this new movie coming out. Will Smith is in this movie, and it's called Concussion. I don't know if you've seen a preview for it or not, but it's talking about, you know, the effects of NFL players after they've retired, and their long-term mental health due to traumatic brain injuries. I imagine, well, okay, I know you didn't get hit very much, but what do you think about that?
I always tell people that getting hit sucks. Anyone that says they like the standard trade, I go, well, you're a better person than me, or actually I'll say you're an idiot, because standard trading is not exactly a smart thing to do. One of the most classic matches, and I hate to say this, because people will think I'm being hard on Don Fry, but Don Fry, he's like a brother there to me. I coached him when I was coach at Arizona State. He was one of my wrestlers. I'm the guy to help get him into it. But he has a classic match, Pride, where he is versus up against Pacquiao, and literally they have each other's hand cradled in one hand, and they are just punching the crap out of each other. I mean, almost like this contest of who is going to give in first. The first time I saw this match, I mean, when I finally saw Don, I go, so, Don, what exactly was going through your mind other than Takayama's fist? You know, to stay in there, because you can tell he paid a price for that match. And in no means am I trying to throw Don underneath the bus or something like this. There's a number of guys that you can tell. I mean, I knew them before they really got into the industry, or they were young in the industry. And then after a few more years, the same person. Not all the wires are connected anymore.
But you know what it is?
That's tough.
Not to cut you off, Don, but what happens is, and we're all guilty of it, is the machismo, once you're involved in something like that, you know, especially as a wrestler, you're conditioned not to give up. So you're going to pursue it, and that's kind of like the curse of the sport. I mean, you're going to give it your full-out effort, and if it goes to hands, you're going to switch to hands. You're just going to do whatever, and unfortunately, that's just the after effect of it. Because, you know, I look at Deion Sanders, you know, and people used to talk about Franco Harris used to run out of bounds as a football player. Now I look back, in retrospect, that was the smartest thing that he could have done, because he still has his health and his faculties intact. But we as macho guys, we just, if it comes to contact, we bring it. That was ingrained in us. And unfortunately, that's the after effect of having that kind of training and that mindset.
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying on that there, Mandy. It's, I run a program at Arizona State, a submission grappling program, but then back in my training facility at Coldwater, Michigan, you know, one of the classes is MMA, and a lot of times I said, we're not here, we're a family. This is our brotherhood. You know, every now and then we'll get very few females that we ever had in the industry, but we get a token once here or there. But, you know, now that the sport's evolved that much more, I'm sure that you have tons more females that have invaded that industry. Just like where men's boxing was there for a long time, and then females were just getting their feet wet into that. It's just a slow evolution, but the evolution takes place nevertheless. But that's one thing I have to constantly always say as I monitor practice, that when we're doing some like live sparring, it's got to be done in percentiles. There's no way that you can train at 100% and still have people left over, because getting hit, struck, going for submissions live, you know, it's. I think that's one of the testimonials of a good training camp or a good coach is from getting hurt and bringing them along properly, sitting there and just. Because there are some camps that they're to be known for. If we, you know, we just beat on you, and you keep coming back to vent, you prove to us that you have that kind of a spirit. And I don't agree with that. I really don't. I mean, it's I know what I've done in my own career and how I've tried to associate with people and conduct my own training camps, things of that nature. And I want to be around here. I want to be around for the long haul. We say it a lot of times when I was still competing in mixed martial arts, I was doing the professional wrestling, doing all this kind of stuff. Guys were like, going, well, how long do you think you'd keep this up? I go, well, I said, I plan on living to 125. I said, if I just quit now, I said, I might get a little bit bored, so I want to keep this other stuff going as long as I possibly can. I go, no one wants to know that their demise is coming. So I said, at 125, I want my life to be taken tragically and suddenly by a jealous husband. I mean, I guarantee you, my tombstone will become a monument to all these young men. They will come up there, they will want to rub the stone, and they will like worship, oh, I'm not worthy. I mean, it's my mom. Every man's got to have a dream. Every man's got to have a dream. That's my dream.
Hey, man, if you got to go, that's the best way to go.
She'll be a much younger woman. She'll be in her 90s. It's those orthodontic stockings. I couldn't help myself.
So you're still doing training camps then? I mean, it's good that you train the people not to hurt each other, but like I said, I think it's still in the fighter itself, though. I think that somehow we have to... like you're trying to get people to avert away from that, and I guess the younger you start, maybe that can maybe start trending differently. But as long as we have that machismo in us, man, it's always going to be a problem somewhere. I believe.
Maybe, but having that and the federal, like let's say this, I'm kind of like the father figure in my class type settings. There, so it's like I try to show them by example too. I lead by example. I don't just simply just say words. These guys, they know that I'm the scariest cat, but I'm the safest guy that they will ever roll with and stuff like that. We might be doing something like you'll have on MMA gloves, and as you roll around with MMA gloves, you're going for submission grappling. So you're going 100% grappling, but the moment that you secure a position, you secure a lock, you know that you have it, you slowly start applying pressure. You don't just lock it on and then just refine to it and then tear someone's shoulder, tear someone's elbow, crank someone's knee or something like this. You just, it shows to me, it shows you under control. You have to have control. The moment that you lose control in a match, that's typically when you are going to lose in the first place. You have to stay, you got to keep your wits about you. And I mean, that's some of the things that some athletes will do. they simply know that if I just start to verbally start to taunt you, all of a sudden all you see is red. I want to kill. And so now you no longer are thinking rationally. And, you know, I've always looked upon it, be the methodical thinker. Know that what you're doing, do the least amount of work, maximum effort, the thing you have to look at. And then you very well know this, because in the beginning, it was unlimited amount of time. You don't know how long a match is going to go, so it can go on forever. So you have to pace yourself. Well, you know, now it's set up for rounds. Standard is 3 rounds, and for championship bouts, 5 rounds, 5 minutes at the point. So now, you know, people are just training for those elements. So, I mean, there's a lot that goes into training. At one point in time, I was at one of the UFC shows, and one of the things that kind of came up was with Lorenzo Fertitta and with Dana White. And the question that was brought to me, like, Dan, there seem to be a lot of injuries taking place in these training camps, and what is happening? And I go, well, to me, that's a reflection upon the coach overseeing it and monitoring stuff like this. I mean, I take a great deal of pride in my training facility in Coldwater, Michigan. I mean, I've had that place open since 90, I bought a place in 92, I think it was I had people in there by 94, and I think I really opened up as a true business by 1995, but the reality was, out of all those years, I've only ever had one major injury, a spiral fracture, and that was a couple guys that were screwing around before class ever began. But during class times, no. Every now and then, sure, you get a bloody nose. You get a split lip or something like this because someone, you know, misgauged depth or they went a little bit more than that 25 to 50%. I think there'd be no time that we'd ever say we're going to go, you know, balls on the wall 100% on things. I mean, submission grappling, yeah, you can go for it until you know, okay, I've got to hold on. Now I want to slowly apply pressure and allow the guy to tap out so that the guy realizes who is caught in this. Oh, gosh, he's got me. I did not realize he's got me this neck crank. He's got me this leg lock. So it's the greatest compliment I was ever given. I had a gentleman. He was, at the time, I was probably 47, 48, something like this, and he was probably in his early to mid-50s. And first calls me up, he says, do you do private lessons? And I go, well, I do, but I'm not a big fan of them because, to me, a lot of my stuff is rapid-based. I need a minimum of 3 people because you need to see me do it at someone else. I want to feel you doing it to me. And so you need that third, you need a third person. So he said, well, I'd like to sign up for a private maybe too. So he was kind of reluctant. So literally he comes in, fast forward 10 days later, he takes a private lesson every day. And then jumps into my regular class. And each day he opens up to me a little bit more and a little bit more. Turns out he was an owner of a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu school. And at this point in time, had they known that he was training with me, they would have taken his association, affiliation, all that away from him. And I said, who am I going to talk to? I said you've been a squared away type individual. I said, I've enjoyed having you here. I said, and he's like, well, what do I tell him when I go back to him? And I start using all these unique techniques and stuff like this. I go, just tell him you went on vacation. And I said, but only do one move here and one move there. I go, slowly put it on in there right there, because he was the oldest guy in the dojo, and he basically said he was just cannon fodder for the young guy. I said, do your thing, and then after about 30 days, a month, contact me and let me know how it goes. Basically, about a month and a half goes by, I get a phone call out of the blue. He is chuckling up a storm. He goes, he says, I did exactly what you said. He said, I have tapped everybody out in my gym, and they want to know where I went on vacation now.
you should tell them I stayed at Holiday Inn.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing about that. I mean, Fred's been to my place a number of times. I've been down to, he's set up all types of seminars down in and around Fort Wayne area, stuff like this, and he sees the way I operate. I mean, it's I have a very abstract mind. The body really twists so many different ways, and they're just, I have some very unique type of techniques that I do that, I mean, that they'll work on anybody, and they'll just inflict, even if it's just, because if you deal with guys that wear a lot of knees all the time, they'll simply say, oh, I can't do nothing. He's all crammed up. He's in this ball. I go, well, induce pain. I said, you induce a little bit of pain. Everyone will move to alleviate pain. And I go, that's the beauty about it right there. One of the shirts I wanted to come up with, a T-shirt where it was like, pain, the gift that keeps on giving. But it's true. I mean, well, man, you'll think about it. Being an amateur wrestler or stuff like this, when I teach amateur wrestling, 8th grade below, I teach one way. 9th grade and above, differently. 8th grade below, it's all about fun, sportsmanlike conduct. It's all about principles of leverage. Once you're in 9th grade, now there's a chance to go to states, place at states, win a state title. And then I'll say, hey, Manny, what do those principles of leverage feel like? And you're like, well, coach, they kind of hurt. Bingo. It's called legalized pain. The more legalized pain that you put your opponent into, the more he's willing to do for you. He's not going to roll on his back and get pinned just because I go, coochie, coochie, coo. No, he's going to do it because I'm going to throw him down. I'm going to hit him with a cross face. I'm going to take this chicken wing. I'm going to use this bar arm. I'm going to throw a three-quarter Nelson out of my drive. And I'm going to impose my will upon them. And that's what it boils down to. Wrestling. Wrestling is actually I'd watch that on a high school level than on a collegiate level. Collegiate level, it just bores me to tears because there's so much stuff that takes place. But there is no sport that simulates wrestling. It's just a physical chess match. That's how I always look at it. And you gotta use your mind. Your mind better be just as powerful as what your body is. And typically, in my opinion, the mind is more important. There's a lot of coaches that they train the body, but they forget about the greatest attribute, and that is that athlete's mind. Even when I sign a lot of younger athletes that are sparring to go on, they say, can you write me something of inspiration? I go, sure. And I'm like, you know, to Fred, remember to train your mind as well as your body, because most athletes, they train the body. They forget about the mind.
Well, that's all for part one of our interview with Dan Severn. But Funky Monkey MMA Radio fans, you don't want to miss part two of our fascinating interview with Dan, because in part two, you'll find out why Dan is calling out Ken Shamrock and Royce Gracie, and why he really wants to come out of retirement just to fight them.
You can listen to Funky Monkey MMA Radio on iTunes, Stitzer Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, Castroller, the TuneIn Radio app, MMAFutures.com, and FightBookMMA.com. If you want the freshest news and notes on MMA, then check out FunkyMonkeyMMA.com. Interested in sponsoring the show? Then send an email to FunkyMonkeyMMA@gmail.com.
You're listening to Funky Monkey MMA.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.